You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan. Good morning, Nan.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very good. That's very good.
We had a bit of a fun weekend, didn't we? We got to go to Kate Sobrano.
Yeah.
At the Grand Hotel in Mornington.
She was fantastic, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what an audience. So it was jam-packed. There was not a seat available.
I know.
Yeah.
Beautiful sound.
She brings in a big crowd, and she had this gorgeous band behind her of all these lads, as Kate Sobrano does.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think there were six or seven suited up jazz boys behind her.
Yeah, she was flirting with them.
Yeah, she was having a good laugh about it all, but very entertaining. And as she said, she puts the magic between the notes.
That's right.
Absolutely. Now, we've got an exciting show today.
We do. We have Katie Underwood in the building.
Katie Underwood, the most talented Katie Underwood. A lot of us remember her from Bardo.
Yes.
But that was a long time ago, and she has, like all of us, she has evolved.
Yes, she has. She's transformed
into
an amazing, gorgeous woman.
I just love these artists, you know, who can keep transforming.
I know.
You know?
That's what it's about, though. You need to keep transforming.
It is. That's the journey.
Yeah.
But and it keeps it interesting.
That's right. Exactly.
We don't like boring.
No, we
We're
don't.
Not good at boring.
She doesn't either, I've heard. She doesn't do boring.
I'm eager to hear about that.
That's right.
So we're going to get started because we want to sort of show you, you know, her story in a way.
Yeah.
And how she started, which was, you know, obviously just a kid that loved musing and loved singing, just like I think, you know, I know my kid and things like that, and entered a competition pop star.
That's right.
And she found herself on one heck of a...
A journey,
one heck of a ride. So let's just start with one that everyone knows, which is Poison. So here we go.
You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan. And in the studio, we have Katie Underwood. Welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Katie Underwood, excited. We're your number one fan.
Oh. Hey, we were also watching the YouTube while we were playing that.
Yes.
And we noticed that you had this purple latex number on.
Very sexy.
Yes, purple latex cat suit.
How old would you have been when you were?
I was 24.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, when I started. So yeah, old enough
very impressive.
To...
Carried
old
off.
Enough to know better, but young enough not to care. So, yeah, but they don't breathe, those suits. So the one thing I remember from that clip was the really, really hot on-camera set lights that had to light up this whole set that we were doing and then immediately around us. So after 2 hours or 2 to 3 hours of wearing this suit, when I finally took it off, there was a river of sweat. I'm not exaggerating. Must have been like half a litre of sweat, like water.
Well, you could have bottled that up and sold it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe not. But, yeah, that's what I remember from that suit. So it was, I don't think I ever wore it longer than that time.
So have you
but
worn
it was fun.
I don't think I've ever worn anything like that before in my life. And those years are gone, that there would ever be an opportunity like that.
Yeah, I only wear latex gloves for housework.
Yeah, for housework.
Yeah, right. Just, there you go.
They hope that they're purple. but, yeah, look, an amazing career and a wonderful Australian story because you were born in Adelaide, is that right?
I was, yes. Mm. I spent the first 19 years of my life in Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
Great place to grow up, but like many, once you hit that adult age, there's a real decision. Do you stay and...
Or do you go?
Do you stay or do you go? So I think 95% of my friends from school all moved interstate overseas. It's just what people do for work.
And what was the decision? What was the opportunity that took you away from Adelaide?
For me, it was a combination of things. My parents had already moved across to Melbourne. My dad worked for Telstra for 45 years, bless his socks.
Wow.
He's retired now, but... he was being sort of lured by his boss who was in Melbourne for many years and he said, no, I won't move until both my kids have finished high school.
What a good dad.
Good dad. So anyway, as soon as I'd finished year 12 and got into uni, he said, right, let's go. And they wanted me to go with them and I applied for both Melbourne and Adelaide, but I only got in to Adelaide Uni. So that made the decision for me to stay for a bit.
And what were you doing at uni?
Maths and computer science.
Are you serious? You're a computer geek.
No, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. See, that's something.
Right.
Yeah.
So I stayed for a bit and then after a time I was really struggling with my degree. I wasn't feeling really good about it.
Heart wasn't in it?
My heart wasn't in it. And so I just told my parents, I'm like, you know what, I'm done with this degree. I've got two-thirds of the way through. I don't think I'm going to finish. And they're like, okay, just don't worry about it. Come over to Melbourne You can start here. So it made it really easy for me to head over there. The other factor was probably that I was growing in ways that the very narrow-minded culture in Adelaide wasn't prepared to embrace. So simple things like having bright red hair was really quite odd for people in Adelaide. So, and there were other things that started to occur for me as I grew older that also didn't align with Adelaide's values. So Melbourne was much more open-minded and expansive for me, and I felt much more at home here than I ever did in Adelaide once I moved.
Fantastic. And what about the music side of things? Was that something that came, you know, when you're really young, or
were you singing in front of the mirror with a hairbrush?
Oh, probably. I used to sing. My mother tells me I sang to just about everything. So from the age
TV
of
commercials,
yes, right, that's where I started.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was about two, and I would sing along TV commercials. I would sing at night when it was bedtime, just life making up my own songs. I remember my sister constantly telling me to shut up and stop singing because it was annoying.
Did you do little concerts in front of parents?
Probably.
Yeah.
And then at six, my parents got me into piano. So I started playing piano quite young. And then at about 9 or 10, I started in the school choir in primary school. Mm-hmm. And then that evolved into a much larger choir. I joined the Adelaide Girls Choir.
Wow.
When I was about 12. Mm-hmm. And accelerated quite quickly through there. Hierarchy, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. Worked your way up.
Worked my way up and stayed with them for 5 years. And then, yeah, I had to sort of put that to rest once I got into year 12 because I just wanted to concentrate on that. Mm-hmm. So, but my choir days, I think, was the best foundation in my vocal training than anything else, along with piano, of course, which gives you a great foundation in music across the board. But that's where it started for me.
Did you love playing the piano?
I did. I did love it. I was terrible at sight reading because I was excellent at remembering things. So just by default, even these, you know, sonatas and fugues and things because we were trained classically, I would commit to memory very quickly. And so I would stop looking at the music, which is a big no-no. You're supposed to keep looking up. And I would just play it off by heart.
Well, you're natural, clearly. Yeah.
And I've always had a good memory for music.
Right.
Once I hear something, it's pretty much there.
That's handy, really.
Which is handy. But but when I started singing, it was so much easier again. And I thought, well, I'm kind of bored with piano. You have to have a big instrument with you and all this music. Whereas to me, my voice became my main instrument, and it was totally mobile and totally free. And, you know, I could take it anywhere. So it just made more sense to pursue singing rather than to continue with the piano playing.
Wow, can you imagine that? And did you go travelling or anything? Did you ever get a chance to go backpacking? Because I'm just thinking, because I travelled like for 3 years through third world countries, and it's amazing the people you meet. And can you imagine if you happened to meet Katie Underwood? Do you know what I mean? And then she'd just wake up and there'd just be song.
Yeah,
you know? Right, exactly. And you'd be like, wow, I definitely chose the right backpacker to hang out with.
That's funny. No, I didn't. I didn't have the travel bug. Yeah. In fact, I didn't go overseas until I was about 23 for the first time. And it was for music. I travelled over to the UK to do a trance music track with this guy. I'd recorded some vocals over one of his hits and ended up recording it with a friend and just sent it over him, potluck, thinking, well, maybe he'll record it with me. And he did. And
it's fantastic.
He was in America at the time, and he's like, oh, my manager just sent me this thing that you did and I think it's really great. Do you want to come over to London?
Wow.
Okay, being
bought out. Yeah, I totally will. So, that was, I suppose, my first step into professional music, really, even before pop stars. But, you know, it was just this sort of indie trance artist over in the UK, so I didn't think about it too much. But yeah, I didn't do the backpacking thing. I don't know.
Well, when we were looking through all the YouTubes before you were coming in and, you know, looking back in time, and of course we all knew and we loved it, you know, in our early teens and early 20s, you could hear the jazz singer in you, you know, as much as you were doing the pop star thing. And you were playing it very well. You played the role very well. We all loved it. We absolutely loved it.
But
you could see there was something more to you.
Yeah, more depth.
And I just want to, you know, show listeners what you can do. And here we go. This is off your album, Ain't Nobody's Baby, Fever.
That was Katie Underwood, Fever. You're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan.
I do like that one. I think that was one of my favourites off the album because it was an album mixed a few originals, but then mainly covers. I been working with a jazz band for about a year, and it was basically my regular band. And we just put these songs together. And then you were saying how the song sounded almost a bit echoey, a bit reverby, but I loved the fact that it was so stripped back, that, you know, really there were only just a couple of elements, the voice or guitar, little, you know, subtle drums. Mm. So it was nice to be able to produce something that was so far away from, you know, the Bardo years and the very, very intense, you know, level of music production. Mm. So very different.
Fantastic. Yeah. So now we want to know a little bit, I guess, about, you know, how your career took off through Popstar.
Of course.
So how did you get into doing that in the first place?
So my Popstar's journey was really a bit of an accident for me. I know it sounds strange to say that, but I was already performing with my jazz band, with an original jazz band, not the one that I did the album with. Mm-hmm. So I'd just started to learn jazz for the first time, and I'd done a little bit of dance music, and one of my very good friends, Nikki, she said, look, you really need to go and audition. I've just been reading Woman's Day and they're auditioning for a pop band and you should totally do it. And I'm like, well, look, I don't read Woman's Day. I don't listen to the radio. I don't even like pop music. Why on earth would I want to do something like that? She said, look, I just think that you'd be really good. It doesn't matter if you don't get in. Just be a really good experience. You should do it. You should totally do it. And I'm like, all right. It was Wednesday, I remember, Wednesday afternoon. And the audition was on Saturday. So I'm like, okay, how does one audition to be in a pop band, an a la sort of Spice Girls band? Yeah. So I just wore some of my most outrageous clubbing outfits, you know, big fluffy jackets and had a mirror breastplate and some crazy boots. I thought, well, pop band, they're not necessarily looking for the best singers in the world. They're looking for characters. They're looking for
personality.
They're looking for identity. And although I knew I could sing, I thought I needed to give them much more than that. So I did, and in fact I gave them so much that they asked me to pull it back a little bit. So I got through the first the first half day of auditions and we love you. We love your voice, but can you tone down the outfits just a little bit and show us that you can be a bit more in the normal range? I'm like, I can do that.
I can do that.
So I'll try anyway.
I came back from the, you know, black leathered mirrored breastplate outfit to just some colourful, you know, clubbing pants. And then really my process in getting through that was just to go one step at a time. It sounds simple to say that, but everyone else, a lot of people who were auditioning were, you know, had been through singing schools and dancing schools from a young age, and they were determined to make music a career, and that was their whole dream. That was all they've wanted to do. Yeah. For me, yes, I'd been involved with music since I was a child, but my parents had long since convinced me that doing it as a career was a hopeless venture and that I should have a real job. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
A day job.
They were right and they were wrong, but that's another story. But anyway, so at each stage I just went, you know what, I'd be great if I make it to the next bit. And I'd never been to Sydney, and so I knew that 25 people were going to get chosen, or was it 100 people? No, maybe it was 25, would make it to Sydney for the final stage of auditions. And I thought, it'd be great to just get to Sydney. Really, that was where I was at with it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd be good. Yeah. Free trip to Sydney.
Free flight.
Awesome. And so then I got told, yes, you've made it to Sydney. Oh, great. And then there was, I don't know, 4 or 5 days of auditions in Sydney. And every day I'm like, this is cool. Really having no expectation. Meanwhile, you know, left and right, people were just falling off from stress. Great singers, beautiful girls, awesome dancers. But the stress was getting to them because their whole life's dream was based on how's the next thing go. Whereas I'm just cruising through really relaxed going, this is cool.
Yeah.
I'm in
Being
Sydney.
In the moment,
having fun. Yeah, yeah. Well, next thing I knew, I'm in the band. So that
you're like,
really,
okay,
yeah.
Wait a sec.
What happened there?
What did I sign? Did I sign something?
Yeah. So that's a great
attitude though. Yeah. That got you there, I reckon.
It does sound
really,
approach.
I really think that helped me to stay relaxed.
And centered.
That, yeah, yeah. Stress really did people's heads in, and because I was able to stay grounded throughout, I didn't lose my nerve, and my singing and my performing got better throughout the audition process, rather than for some people the nerves would get on top of them and they'd forget steps or they'd forget the song or whatever.
Sounds like you were just having a ball.
I was.
You're just flying by the seat of your pants and just seeing what was going to happen.
Well, I had no expectation, and it served me well. But yeah, the pop stars process itself, once we were in the band, was very much like a continual audition process. You know, you'd have a song thrown at you in the morning. Right, girls, there's the song we're recording today. You've got 2 hours. Learn your parts, and here's the order of recording, and we'll have it done by the end of today. And then you'd
churn them out.
Absolutely. Like a factory. Then you'd go to bed, you'd go to gym in the morning, and then you'd hit the studio at 10, learn the song, go in, record it then and there. It was very, very fast.
Like a cookie cutter sort of approach.
So I realised that it was so essential that you were able to get through that audition, not just to, again, show if you were, you know, could dance or sing or perform, but can you hold yourself with grace under fire and do this stuff under pressure? Because it did not stop once we were in. So, amazing. We enjoyed it.
I can imagine it'd be very difficult to keep your own heart in all that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know.
I think she did in this instance.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about the passion. Do you imagine if you sort of like someone gives you a song and you've just got to find something in it that you connect with?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But you're only kind of 24 and, you know, you haven't really been out there in the big world to have had your heart broken too many times yet. And, you know, how did you find the energy to connect when that morning you find out what song you're singing and by the afternoon it's done?
I think for us, we were fortunate with respect to connecting with the music. The makers of Bardo, or the makers of Popstars, were very aware that their main demographic, main listeners, were going to be, you know, sort of kids to older teens.
For sure. Yeah.
And then possibly their parents. So, you know, the lyrics were pretty clean cut. And able to be enjoyed by anyone from sort of 5 to 55. So in that, there was usually something that we could connect to. There were definitely songs that we liked better than others.
Yeah.
And there were those moments where you go, you know what, doesn't matter if you like it. This is your job. You find a way to make it work. There was one song, and I can't remember which one it was now, but there was one song that we all hated so much that we refused to ever perform it live. And we never did in any of our tours. It was just, it was notably absent.
Yes.
Because we did that one under sufferance. But the rest of them, you know, we did enjoy. And when you start performing, you develop more of a relationship with a song because you get the feedback then from people who know the words and they're into it, and that just spurs on your own motivation for it. So once we got rolling with performing, it was a lot of fun.
There were some great skills I'm sure you learnt too, because it's not just about singing, is it? You got to dance and the animation and the cameras.
And the commitment and the fast pace of everything.
Singing, dancing, fitness, media training.
It's like boot camp, isn't it, really?
High intensity, for musicians. Learning to live with flatmates, five girls in a 3-bedroom apartment.
Ooh, and you weren't friends beforehand.
Right. I hope there were 2 bathrooms.
There were, yes, yes.
You'd be funny over the bathroom for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There were certainly moments in that, but a lot was learned in those years.
Such a beautiful song.
That was a gorgeous song. Yeah. So we were just nattering, while we were listening. And all the things that you've gone through. But, you know, we're excited to see that you're a part of the practitioner gang now.
Yes.
Considering Simone's been a life coach for over 10 years before she started Smart DNA. I've been a kinesiologist for, I don't know how long, but certainly been in complementary medicine for a good 15 years.
Yeah.
So how did it find you, I guess, is always a question.
So technically, I started into the healing industry about 8 years ago when I first started to do massage. But the question of, you know, where did it start?
Yeah.
As a child, I actually used to massage friends and family. We would go away to the Riverland in South Australia, and around the campfire every night was, you know, everyone would get showered, get dressed and converge around the campfire. And my mother was a beautician in the 80s, and she'd shown me a few basic sort of massage steps because I wanted to learn from her and be a massage therapist. And so I would do these little, you know, 10-minute massages for people around the campfire for, you know, $1 a piece.
I was going to say, you get some coin, yep.
Yeah. It wasn't for that though, but they would often comment that my thumbs were really strong and that actually I was quite good, and they were surprised. So I had a strong interest in that for many years, right up until about 15, and I when I said to Mum I wanted to be a massage therapist, she said, look, you know, that's a lot of hard work. I said, well, what else could I do? She goes, well, you could be a physiotherapist. And I'm like, oh, what's that? So she explained. So from the age of 9, when people asked me what I wanted to do when I grew up, I said, I want to be a physiotherapist. And they're like, and what's that? And I would give them this whole spiel about what it was. And they were, you know, all right. Mm. Anyway, at 15, like most people, I got utterly confused because they throw every career at you under the sun and, you know, from year 10 onwards. And I abandoned that. So interesting that then it came full circle, you know, 20 years, more than 20 years later, when I was inspired to get into healing. I was looking to move out of the music industry with lots of late nights, lots of alcohol, lots of, you know, clubs and traveling and being on your own. And I was looking ahead towards having a family, and I wanted to choose a career that was going to be more flexible around having my children. And I remembered, well, massage. I always loved doing that. And so that's where it started. And then a few years later, I did my Reiki 1 and 2 certification. Mm-hmm. And then a few years later after that, the concept of modern sound healing came into my awareness.
And also came into vogue.
And now, it's come into vogue, if you call it that. I call it the new yoga. Sound yoga.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
All right then.
So that was 3 years ago. So now what I do in private practice, I offer massage, Reiki and sound healing one-on-one. Mm-hmm. But also now actually the major part of my career and my business is running sound meditation workshops all across Melbourne.
Wow.
So that involves some guided meditation, some sound journeying and also some group vocal meditation, which is fully guided. So
how many years have you been into more complementary medicine for?
8 years.
Yeah, so 8 years all up.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you've been doing it for quite some time then.
Mm.
So, but more recently you've decided to really build these wonderful tribes of people where you can do your sort of sound healing, you know, in big groups.
Well, it was such a funny thing because I'd been into massage for a few years and I was still getting offered to do gigs, corporate events and jazz gigs and recordings. And although I've done a little bit of that over the years, pretty much once I had my children, I lost a lot of interest in performing. It just didn't seem like that was me anymore. My focus was elsewhere. So a few years in, I sort of started saying no to gigs. I thought, well, maybe it's just time for me to close that door to music altogether and accept that I'm now in a healing career. Mm. And then ironically, once I started into sound meditation, I now sing more often than I probably ever did because I'm doing it in the scope of my personal sessions and in my group sessions. So it was that wonderful fusion for me of putting music and my passion for healing together in the same breath. And that feels right. That feels like I finally found my calling.
Sure.
Mm. And some of your tribe from way, way back is attending your classes.
Oh, yes. I was saying before that a couple of my girlfriends came along to my last event, which I did with three other sound practitioners, and we had 60 people at this amazing venue in North Melbourne. And I just commented on how funny it was. You know, we were finishing up the event at about 9:30 and I said, how classic is this? You know, they used to come to my club gigs back in the early 2000s. Yeah. They'd come to my jazz gigs, you know, bought my CDs, and now look at us all. We're meditating together and making sounds together. And it was just lovely. We just had a little laugh about, you know, they're still my groupies, but look how much we've all evolved and all changed.
Have you considered making a CD with your...
I have. People have been asking me for it for the last 2 years. So it's on the to-do list this year. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do some recording with a guy I did some recording with many years ago in the dance club era, but he was always wonderful at capturing my voice, and it's going to be a lot of vocal components. So it's on the list for 2017.
Well, that's exciting.
I hope to have it out available before Christmas this year.
Yes.
So.
Fantastic. I know I've had some sound healing. I'm sure you have as well, you know, with practitioners.
Yeah.
But can you imagine if you got Katie Underwood?
I know.
So be lying down relaxing, not knowing that it is the Katie Underwood. And then suddenly you hear these most beautiful sounds coming out. You're like, wow, never had a practitioner like that before. They must get quite a shock, I'd say.
It's quite different. Yeah, I like that people don't know. And perhaps because I'm not as recognisable as I used to be. I was always the redhead from that band, whereas now I'm sporting blonde hair, and so it's not as clear cut. But often after events, people go, "Are you that that Katie, that I said, yes, I'm that Katie.
Yes, yes. So, that one. Yeah.
But then, you know, it passes pretty soon and they don't tend to care. They're like, oh, well, that doesn't matter. What you just did just then, it was wonderful. When are you bringing your album out? I'm like, it's coming.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be amazing for you. Well, I've also got a song here that we all remember. So I'm just going to play it and see who out there remembers the name of this one. Here we go.
Beautiful 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan. And in the studio we have Katie.
Yay! It's so good to have you here. And now that song, and it was the same song as the song we played before,
but with
such a funky jive to it.
No, it was such a great step for me. It was the first release I had after leaving the band, Bardo. And an interesting story, because the two guys that I wrote that song with, they were tasked the job of removing my vocals from two songs that we'd begun to record off the second Bardo album, because I left just as we were starting to record that.
Yeah.
And so they rang me up and said, oh, hey, what are you doing? And I'm like, nothing, you know, I have no job, no whatever, I've left the band. What are you doing? They said, oh, we're ripping your vocals out of all the Bardo songs. I said, oh, great. Thanks for telling me that.
Thanks for sharing.
Really good. They said, no, that's not why we're ringing. We've done this song. We've got this band called Disco Montego. We've released one song. We want to step into the next one. Would you be interested in being our vocalist? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I totally would love to do that. So they presented me with this song, and they'd written the chorus already and the music.
Yeah.
They said, we haven't written the verses. We want you to go away and write the verse. Mm-hmm. And this was like 7 o'clock at night. They were in Paddington. I was staying with friends in Marrickville. And they said, okay, here's a song. Have a couple of listens. Can you write the verses and come back tomorrow and we'll record it?
Oh,
no pressure. Okay, sure. So I took the song, wrote the first verse in the car driving home in 20 minutes.
Multitasking. That's how we do it.
Yeah, just playing it over and over. And then the next morning got up, wrote the second verse, took it back, and I'm like, I don't know, sweat off my brow going, this is either just going to hit the mark or it's not. Anyway, long story short, if it's not too late, that beautiful ended up being that song. So they originally released it through the club market, and they didn't promote that it was a Katie Underwood thing or anything like that. And the song became a runaway club hit before the media or anyone realised
that
it was me. And then once people did realise, well, then it got even more traction. So, but that was a real great validation for me as a songwriter to be recognised for the song itself as opposed to the persona that had been marketed. So, that was wonderful. And we won a gold ARIA for that song. And the video actually won the ARIA award, and we got an ARIA nomination that year. So it was a great stepping stone for me after.
Again, what a great ride.
And a confirmation that you did the right thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was about a year after I had left the band that I released that song and then started working with Channel 7 and doing all sorts of other things as well. So.
And you're still here on radio today.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. Relevant.
I know. Totally.
Very relevant.
Absolutely. So we want to just tune in a little bit more about these singing bowls.
Yes.
Because obviously it's fascinating. And, I mean, I work with energy every day and I do understand that the body, you know, really does – we are just big balls of energy, really.
Yes.
And therefore we can be balanced through sound. Mm. You must have had some amazing sessions with people where they've experienced, you know, fantastic change.
It is. I think for the sound meditation sessions that I run, the simplest way to describe it is as a guided meditation using sound.
Yeah.
I think that's the most basic level that everyone can access and understand. As to the reactions that people have, it can be as simple as having a deeply restorative sleep to having incredibly profound spiritual experiences while people go on these sound journeys, and so much other stuff in between. I've had people who have chronic pain who will have relief of that pain after having the session. And for anyone that's experienced chronic pain, you know, mostly the relief comes from deep physical therapy or drug therapy or other things. So to have anyone be able to take away your pain or, more to the point, come into a meditative state where you can recalibrate that is exciting. So it's an exciting way of helping people heal themselves.
Yeah, very fulfilling.
In that sort of setting, I never proclaim that I'm the healer.
No.
It's more that I'm facilitating a space. I'm holding a space. I can, as a also a trained meditation teacher, I can guide you through the steps so that you can access your deeper levels of of healing.
Of healing. Mm. Amazing. Well, we're coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be there.
So, when? Tell us about this for okay. sure workshop.
So, I've got some dates. At the moment, I do 5 different locations around Melbourne. So, yeah. I've just started in Jembrook. I do Ferntree Gully as well, Wood End, which is in the north, Williamstown, and Northcote. Now, all my events for June are already booked out, just about. But I will give you some other ones that are coming up. So I think the next one I have, I've still got a couple of places in Williamstown on Friday the 23rd of June.
Then have to get the ferry for that one.
Then get the ferry. The next day I'm in Wood End, and I'm usually there every month. So that's on Saturday the 24th of June. And then I'm back in Ferntree Gully on Friday the 7th of July. And Jembrook a week after that. So if people want details, they can jump onto my Facebook page, which is /UnderwoodHC, and you can find all the details that you want there and events and book in with me there.
I think we need to get you down to Mornington.
That's right. I think so too.
We need to find a venue.
Yes. I'd love to come down. There's a few basic things I need, heating and cooling if you can get it.
Right.
Acoustically beautiful. So you ladies would know, high ceilings, open rooms.
Yeah.
And that's about it, really.
Well, we've got
the venue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't you worry.
All right.
We just need the date.
Yeah.
And we are there.
And Nan's got her tribe that'll come for sure.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Excellent.
Nan's got a huge following.
It's standing room only. Well, it's been fantastic talking to you. I want to just show everybody a little bit more about the different genres that you can play in. So here's another one of your songs.
That was Element by Katie Underwood. You're on 98.7 FM. Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan.
Wow, there you go. It's very different, aren't they? All the different genres we play today.
But that just shows your versatility.
Yeah, that's really right. And we've just also, with the versatility, we've just made a decision.
We've
totally pulled this together.
And we fast track.
We did.
We don't mess around.
No.
Yeah,
we don't.
We have a workshop already arranged for Mornington.
That's right. We're just tying in some dates. Yes, I think we're going to look at our calendars, cross-check.
We are planning, I think, around September.
Yeah? I think so, yeah.
For when the sun goes down.
Exactly.
We're going to get Katie Underwood to Mornington to do one of her big sessions.
Absolutely. Yes. Would be my pleasure.
So we will promote so it when we release the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on today.
It's been fabulous having you. And again, we're in awe of you. You know, you're someone who's just had a passion for so many different things and gone with the flow and just done it. And that's what we love. That's who we are. And
we wanted to honour you today.